You're listening to the Bitcoin.com podcast. Our guest today is Danish Chaudhry, Managing Director of the Bitcoin.com Exchange. This episode is brought to you by the Bitcoin.com Exchange, the exchange you can trust. Buy and sell Bitcoin as well as 250 digital assets. The Bitcoin.com Exchange is secure, fast, easy, and reliable. Register within seconds and buy crypto with a credit or debit card. Join our community of traders now. Exchange.bitcoin.com. I'm your host, Dustin Plantholt. Join us as we dive into the world of economics, politics, tech, Bitcoin, and cryptocurrency. For even more crypto-related news, sign up at news.bitcoin.com or follow us on Twitter at Bitcoin.com. Now let's bring on our guest. Danish, welcome to the Bitcoin.com podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So we're going to do a weekly recap today and talk about what has happened in the world of digital assets, Bitcoin, and various cryptocurrencies. So tell us, Danish, what has been going on this past week in crypto land?
Yeah, definitely. I'm super excited to do these weekly recaps. I think there isn't enough out there that people can actually kind of quickly listen to on their walk or quickly to kind of recap bits and pieces. And so, you know, the team and I at Bitcoin.com Exchange thought we are very in tune with what's happening around. You know, obviously, almost information overload. So it'd be kind of good to have these podcasts with yourself, obviously, to kind of get some of our viewers or, sorry, listeners an overview of what's happening in the market. So first of many, hopefully these are very interesting people. A few things. Actually, today's like, this week's been fairly monumental. The most recent thing, well, one of the biggest things that have happened, I don't know if you've heard of the Tether lawsuit, the US Tether, USDT lawsuit that was in the US, that was filed by the NYAG, confirming wrongdoing by Tether and how, you know, they've kind of misled their investors. And, you know, that was the biggest piece of FUD that's been around in this industry for quite a while. But I think it was on Tuesday that they posted that the suit has been dropped. The NYAG found no wrongdoing. Yes, there were funds misappropriated, and Tether is basically okay. Still not saying that, you know, it's all 100% cash back, because they do say that they're cash and cash equivalents backed. But, you know, the biggest pieces of FUD that was around this industry has been put to rest. I think that was a quite a monumental news piece in the industry.
So let me ask you about that. I mean, hasn't that happened to various publicly traded companies over the years where some bad decisions were made, they were fined? I mean, hasn't that happened before?
Yeah, it has happened before. And I think this was the first, well, I mean, there's been others that are that have been fined before. So, you know, the biggest one being EOS. They were the big ICO that happened in 2017. Raised $4 billion and they were sued in the US that they did it wrongly. Ultimately, they were fined $16 million and they were let go. That was a big case in the industry. And I think Tether is the bigger one in the industry because everything in the crypto industry is tied to Tether, right? Tether was the first stablecoin that came out and said, you know, we're one-to-one parity with the dollar. And so Tether exists and is paired with every crypto out there, assuming that every dollar is in there, which is also the representation of a digital dollar. And so this case was fairly big in the crypto industry, mainly because Tether being the backbone, if something bad, it's a systematic risk, so to speak. You know, it's kind of like saying, I don't know, the New York Stock Exchange or NASDAQ was sued and wrongdoing was found. And, you know, if they collapse, that would mean the end of the stock at the New York stock market or like NASDAQ. So that's how big and monumental this case was. And so, yeah, it happens in traditional industries. People get fined and they, you know, the wrongdoing is fine. Here, you know, it was kind of like, I don't want to do a parallel to Enron because there wasn't anything wrongdoing, but it's that sort of like a systematic case.
Yeah, because I mean, I had heard for some time by many people, and by the way, I am not one of those that considers myself a trader. I'm a holder. But there was this fear and this worry that was that it was going to crash and literally destroy the Bitcoin ecosystem or the cryptocurrency ecosystem, and yet that didn't happen. So that kind of tells me that what is going on in this ecosystem? What is being built? What sort of projects? Because for the fact that it withstood this and it's only getting stronger, I mean, talk about that.
Yeah, I think it's because the industry is growing so large. I mean, back in the day, 2016, 2017, when most of the people came out to start hodling and start trading, industry was $100 billion, so it was pretty small. And if this were to happen back then, you know, it would decimate the industry. But now, you know, we've grown so much, so many projects have come to light. We've got not only Tether as a stablecoin, you've got Paxos has its own stablecoin, which is fairly popular in the US. They're fully regulated. Circle has USDC, which is another huge stablecoin. That's the one that kind of runs on Coinbase as well, which is another news piece we'll come to, actually. USDC is fairly prevalent. And then there's like a Euro stablecoin, et cetera. So all of these are representatives of the inflows that have come into the industry. And so I think there is a bit of more support and belief in the products that coming around that you see, you know, Tether grew, I think, to $30 billion. I think USDC is a few billion dollars now. And so, this it's just sort of representation of what interest is in the industry and how many new projects come around that everybody's fairly excited about. And so, yeah, there was a fine and we saw a little blip on the charts, but, you know, onwards and upwards.
Tell us about MicroStrategy. I've been hearing about this Northern Virginia-based technology company, this man by the name of Michael Saylor, and he keeps talking about he's making a big purchase. Talk about it.
Yeah, actually, I was just going to say, the other news piece that I was going to say, you know, kind of what you see in the charts and things are being propped up or like things are being bought up is, you know, Michael Saylor came out last year saying he spent $1 billion buying Bitcoin because he thinks... and, you know, to the most part, it's right. And sometimes you agree or sometimes you don't agree where he thinks Bitcoin is a means of saving, which is good. I mean, he equates it to gold. It is digital gold. But obviously, you know, we are more, well, my mindset is more, you know, Bitcoin is meant to be spent. It's a means of transaction. You know, that's what Bitcoin Cash is. You use our wallet, you transact in store, online, wherever it's instance sort of thing. And I think the primary tenet of Bitcoin was to be, you know, a peer-to-peer value transfer. So it's a little bit different, but I think it's still really good for the industry. Like he's bought $1 billion of Bitcoin, and he's, I think to date, bought about $3 billion worth of Bitcoin at price of like, I think his total overall average price is $24,000, which is excellent. And I think the big signal over here is MicroStrategy is a great software company. Saylor's a big Bitcoin maximalist or crypto maximalist as such. I think the biggest signal is that it was the first time that a publicly traded company used some of its reserves to invest in cryptocurrency. And I think that was a big signal saying, you know, we are a real estate company. You can trade our stock. And we use some of our cash and cash reserves to buy Bitcoin. Now, normally, traditionally, it happens in traditional company in old school ways where Apple would come out or Microsoft would come out and say, hey, we have cash and cash reserves. A good CFO would say, hey, we need to reinvest these into other stock or bonds so that we're not losing value in our cash. Because if you have cash sitting around, you're automatically losing money if it's not getting interest or if it's not investing something into something, right? So basic economic factors means you should not have idle cash sitting around. And so when I used to be at BlackRock, we used to, you know, see companies that would invest some of their balance sheet into other company stocks or bonds, etc. Now, this is the first time that a company's actually come out and said they're doing on that cryptocurrency. And the first time it came about was, I think, November last year or October last year. And that was a big bullish signal to the market that the first publicly traded company has done it. After that, of course, everybody knows Tesla came out, and then Michael Saylor has come out and, you know, done a bond offering, which is funny, 0% bond offering, which means whoever's buying in isn't really getting any interest, but they just want to be part of it to buy more Bitcoin. And just recently, this week, also he bought another $1 billion worth of Bitcoin. So he's a big bull, and I think, you know, companies like MicroStrategy and Tesla are kind of giving legitimacy to this industry.
Now, while the show is
for not, a short answer,
that's a good answer. Now, while the show is not about financial advice, and for those listening in, obey your laws, local laws, state laws, country laws around the world. My question for you is leverage trading. I mean, that is the thing that I'm hearing many of these day traders push and push on social media. Again, I am not one of those that calls myself a trader. What is leverage trading, and should people be doing it? Again, you're not giving them financial advice, but is it even smart?
I think leverage trading, I mean, you know, we're an exchange that offers leverage trading, so I shouldn't say like, oh no, don't leverage trade, but I think it's only for people who can understand the risks. I think the basic tenet of margin and leverage trading is you're borrowing funds to trade, right? So you put up some collateral yourself, let's just say you put up 10% collateral, you borrow 90%, you trade based on that collateral, and you know, you split the P&L based upon your borrowing and so on and so forth. Now that could also go south really, really quickly for you. So you borrow 10%, price goes up by 10%, that's fine, but price goes down by 5%, you could instantly, your collateral could instantly be liquidated, meaning you could lose all your funds. And so leverage trading is only for those that are experts or know what they're, you don't have to be an expert, but you need to be like a trained trader in that sense. Like, you need to do a lot of reading. We have a lot of collateral on there. You should not be risking it if you don't know about it. But I think it is a means for people to maximize their gains. So you could, let's just say if you're trading one BTC, you could borrow 9 and start trading with 10 BTC. So that gives you that extra purchasing power. So because, you know, simple mathematics says a 20% gain on one BTC, you'll go to 1.2 BTC. But a 20% gain on 10 BTC, you'll make an extra 2 BTC, right? So that's how margin and leverage kind of works. You're borrowing funds to maximize gains. But obviously on the other side, you're risking your own collateral and you could get liquidated and your all your funds could be wiped away. So I think it's a tool for people to, for experts to really maximize their returns and play high risk. But I don't think like an average retail trader who maybe does a little bit of Uniswap trading or like, you know, buys a little BCH here or there or whatever, I think they should be going down the margin route until and unless they've read up on it.
So pulling back transactions, recently there was a publication where a individual in the crypto market, or let's say Bitcoin, is suing certain developers in the community around Bitcoin. I didn't know that you could even pull back Bitcoin transactions. And I will tell you from my side that there is to me a little bit of the excitement of, well, if I were to be hacked and somebody took my holdings, that so it can be given back to me? Like, I didn't know that could happen.
Technically, you can't really roll back transactions, right? You can't, unless you have minor agreement. So Bitcoin's a chain where, you know, this is when hacks happen, for example, somebody comes out and says, hey, listen, these 10,000 Bitcoin were stolen, a hack happened, we need at least a large consensus of miners to roll back transactions. Now, again, it's not impossible. It is possible, but it's a state which, you know, you need majority of the miners to agree to roll back the transaction, and to get that consensus is next to impossible sort of thing at most times. But also it needs to happen immediately, because otherwise there's a huge cost to it, because how Bitcoin is mined, there's various blocks, each miner is producing blocks. And now the longer you wait, the higher the cost is to roll back those blocks and get back to the original state and then rewrite the blockchain again. And so I think in some of its beauty, Bitcoin's kind of built to say, you know, you shouldn't be rolling back because it's a huge cost. You're going to have 90% or 51% minor majority to kind of agree to it. But I think it's not a common thing to do. And I don't think it's easily, people propose it, but I don't think it's easily, I don't think I've ever seen like a Bitcoin rollback personally, so to speak. But yeah, it's possible, but it's, you know, very not likely to happen.
Understood. And what else has been happening in the market?
So the other thing that happened, so we saw MicroStrategy come in. We saw their lawsuit. I think the recent thing that was filed this morning, which we've all been looking at, is the Coinbase S1 came out. And so they filed for their direct listing, because a lot of companies now are going direct listing and they're not doing an IPO route because they don't want to pay huge broker fees and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And so they do a direct listing similar to what Slack did, similar to what Spotify did as well. So Coinbase filed for an IPO, which is the exciting news. All of their details are online, and I think you know, you can go to Larry Cermak's Twitter and a few other places that have broken it down. So it's kind of like one of the big signals in the US and for the industry that, you know, a crypto business is a legit business and it can list, and, you know, you can go in and see all the VCs that have invested in it, all the people that are part of it, like it details everything. I think it's a big step for the rest of the industry. I think we're going to see quite a few more come out.
That's great feedback. And so what are you hearing from the big investors around the world? I mean, the people like BlackRock and JP Morgan and some of the others, are you hearing more conversation about them going heavier into this market? I mean, investing in this community?
Yeah, so I think, you know, my alma mater, BlackRock, came out a couple of days ago saying that Rick Rieder, who is one of the larger portfolios, one of the biggest fixed income portfolio managers, is now looking into Bitcoin. JP Morgan's already been building their own chain for quite a while. And yeah, larger guys are entering the industry, mainly because a lot of this is retail driven, right? So the more interest that retail has, the bigger interest that the bigger guys will have to capitalize on retail phenomena, right? So it's before it used to happen that institutions will have a product and they would trade it, and, you know, they would have a product that they would champion, and then they would push it down to retail. Now what we're seeing is retail champion this product or this industry, crypto in general, and now institutions kind of have to adopt it, because the people that, you know, deal in cryptocurrency or touch cryptocurrency went from 100,000 to 100 million over the course of the last 5 years, sort of thing. And so I think people have no other choice but to kind of start looking at it. So, you know, for example, guys who cannot get direct exposure to Bitcoin, they're getting indirect exposure to Bitcoin using buying MicroStrategy stock or going to the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, and all that sort of stuff, right? So like these guys, kind of larger guys, are now taking it seriously. It's not just, oh, institutions are coming. I think institutions are already here. Institutions are coming used to be like the line of 2017, like, you know, somebody's going to come out and say, oh, institutions are adopting it. But I think institutions are already here. There's quite a few companies or Bitcoin or crypto projects that are already enabling and have been working with institutions in the past 2 years, and now it's all coming to light. And yeah, it's an interesting time.
It is a very interesting time. And any other words you want to get for the recap of the week?
No, this is good. This has been an interesting week to tether the MicroStrategies and the Coinbase. I think when Coinbase lists, it should be listing, I believe it's next week, or they're still deciding a date, that sort of thing. I think that'll be like a big thing to watch. I think that'll set the precedent for a lot of the other exchanges to come around. And so we'll see how we can obviously capitalize on that. Looking for, I think, another exciting couple of weeks coming up in industries. I still think we're still in a bit of a bull market, and we'll see how long this lasts.
So I have one final question. Can any one person crash the Bitcoin market? I mean, if someone were sitting on, I don't know, 500 Bitcoin or 1,000 and they sold it in the open market, is that going to drop the market at this stage?
No, it's not. I mean, if you look at Bitcoin's like $1 trillion market cap token right now, there's no way that even if 1,000 or even if like 100,000, which is what, like 5 billion right now, tokens, 5 billion Bitcoin, $5 billion in Bitcoin that's dropped right now. Yeah, of course you'll see like a, you know, when you look at the charts, the red candle comes down or whatever sort of thing. But I think there's enough pent up demand that people will absorb it. Yeah, obviously people will freak out a little bit. As with anything, if somebody dumps a huge amount of stock, people freak out, whatever, it's temporary. But nobody can crash the market because, you know, we've reached $1 trillion, and I think there's 100 trillion more to come.
Looking forward to next week's recap. Thanks again, Danish.
Thanks, Dave.
You've listened to another episode of the Bitcoin.com podcast. Subscribe at news.bitcoin.com, where your journey begins.